How are your brackets? I should mute everybody, but I'm not Tony, and I don't care about your brackets. UConn, South Carolina, or the field? And of course, the latest edition of Dos a Cero.
Tyler Adams, a banger, defending of a final.
Thanks to Whittingham and Miola for that one. And of course, the very latest on the Shohei Ohtani gambling allegations. George, Harry, Monica, and Bill, and you know, I'm Clinton Yates, kiddos. Let's go around the horn. Chalkiness in the Sweet 16. All the ones, all the twos, half the threes, and half the fours. First question, is UConn back-to-back championships an inevitable ending? It's been no sweat for them so far, and Purdue and Carolina are also going through without a ton of resistance. It was a sweaty one for Houston last night in overtime against A&M, and some wild performances from Arizona, Duke, Illinois, and the Zags along the way. Harry Lyles Jr., who has impressed you the most through two games?
It's obviously been fun to watch NC State as one of the high seeds, or I guess low seeds, that have actually made the Sweet 16. UConn still looks like one of the best teams, but the most impressive thing, and to me the thing that you needed to see this weekend, was a Purdue team to get the monkey off their back. They needed to get to that second weekend because they were the one team that when we came into this tournament, they could have become the meme team because they embarrassed themselves last year. The year before that, they didn't meet their expectations either. They've come out. Zach Edey has looked as dominant as ever, and this is not a one-dimensional team the way that they have been in the past. They're much better at shooting. You saw that the past couple of games. He's averaging like 26.5 points and I think 17.5 rebounds per game these first two contests. It's the type of performance that Purdue, if they are going to actually compete, get to the Final Four and win a national championship, they have to look like, and we've seen it from them thus far.
Shaq is calling you Zakeel O'Neal. You're in a good place. Monica McNutt, our resident hooper, what did you like from the men's side this weekend?
So as much as the X's and O's in basketball matter during March Madness, so do the stories. And I got to look at the Houston Cougars, whose teammate Reggie Chaney passed away in August. He was a part of the team that went to the Final Four in the 2021 season. And they believed in Reggie. What would Reggie do? The 32 patch that they wear to escape that overtime win versus Texas A&M. To me, being tested early, showing that resolve and that grit and the incredible story that they're fighting for in honor of, I'm watching out for the Cougars.
Bill Barnwell.
I got to go for the one team that survived from the bottom half of the bracket, North Carolina State, a team that is getting hot at exactly the right time. They win 5 games in 5 days to win the ACC tournament, and then they come here and they blow out Texas Tech in the first round. A nationally ranked team had to go to overtime with Oakland's, everyone's darlings. I understand. They led most of that game. They pull away late in overtime. What I love about this team, it's a different guy doing it each day. First round, Ben Middlebrooks went for 20 or more. Over the weekend, it was DJ Burns top in 20. This team has different guys who can pull it out. If you believe that you have to get hot at the right time to go far in this tournament, the North Carolina State team is pulling it off, and it's very clear they believe they're hot right now.
North Carolina State won more games in Capital One Arena in 1 week than the Wizards did all season. That's an actual thing that happened. It is so embarrassing. George Sedano, your thoughts on the opening two rounds of the tournament?
Clinton, I'm going to say it's the entire ACC. They're 8-1 at this point, and Virginia should not even have been in that play-in game. It should have been Pitt, to be honest with you. But 8-1, four teams in the Sweet 16. It feels like every year we hear about how the ACC's down. Oh, the Big 12 is the best conference. Oh, wait, the Mountain West gets six teams in the tournament. The SEC is better. The Big 10. Well, wait a second. The ACC, as I mentioned, has four teams in the Sweet 16. That's more than the Big Ten in the last three tournaments combined, okay? Enough with this. The ACC is down. The ACC's taken a lot of blows here, whether it's football or basketball. But in basketball, they are still the premier conference. Five of the last seven tournaments, they've been in the Final Four.
Nobody has mentioned UConn, so I will. Reminder, they are the defending champions. Harry, if I'm offering you UConn or the field, Blue Blood sidebar, don't argue with me about that. Who you got?
I think the smart pick is honestly UConn. I mean, I took North Carolina in my bracket just because I got to have upsets, right? But if we are speaking from what team has been the best in college basketball all year on the men's side, it has absolutely been UConn. In their three losses, you have had to have shot 53% or better from the three-point line. It takes better than your best to beat this team. It's only happened three times. It's harder for people to sort of grasp that because it's harder to follow men's college basketball nowadays. But to me, this team feels like as close to a certainty as 2013 Louisville, unless I'm forgetting any team in between there.
That's in grand opening, grand closing for that. Monica, your thoughts?
I'm going to take the field. Look, UConn should be favored, but I think we have seen the madness of March. They've got to run into some teams that defend differently than what they've seen in the Big East. They've got teams that play well on a given day in terms of the three-point ball and the ability to force games into OT. They should be favored, but it's just too many teams that could have a good night in college basketball. We see it all the time. The best team doesn't always win. It's the best team on a given night.
Bill Barnwell, UConn or the field?
Field me. UConn should be the favorites, no question. But even they have rough nights. They were 3 of 22 against Northwestern from 3. If they have that kind of night against a better team like San Diego State, who they play this upcoming in the round of 16, that is a serious concern for me. I know they're great. They should be the favorites, but they can have off nights.
Sedano, last word.
Clinton, UConn should be favored, but they have the toughest bracket, no question about it. They should have been in the Purdue bracket. Purdue got the sympathy vote because of what they've endured recently, to Harry's point. But I'm going to take the field in this one just because how difficult that bracket is.
Y'all have no faith in the UConn Huskies. Unbelievable. On the women's side, South Carolina, well, they are the new destroyer of basketball world. Sorry, UConn. 31 of 32 favorites won in the first round on the women's side, but we've seen more chaos in round two. Number two, Stanford needing overtime to get through Iowa State. That was a great ball game if you didn't watch it. And number two, Ohio State falling to Duke. Number three, LSU went down big in the third quarter, but used a huge run to right the ship. Tonight, we got Iowa, UCLA, USC, and the Huskies previously mentioned. Monica, our resident hooper, what has stood out the most to you on the women's side?
So that Stanford-Iowa State game was incredible. Shout out to Audie Crooks and Kiki Urafin, who was fantastic late for the Cardinal. I think it is the boom in talent, honestly, Yates, and I'm so excited about this. On Saturday, there were 13 25-point performers. That hasn't happened in 25 years of the women's tournament. And yes, Caitlin Clark is the headliner, but there's so much talent that is following behind her. I think this stage and right now in women's sports, these young ladies are coming to hoop and they're showing off a plethora of talent in doing that as well.
Bill Barnwell, what are you liking on the women's side of the bracket?
How dominant, utterly dominant, South Carolina is. We know, I mean, they were undefeated heading into the season. Not a surprise that they're winning comfortably, but look at what they did to North Carolina. North Carolina played them close during the regular season, only lost by 7 to South Carolina. They lose by more than 40 points in the rematch. We have South Carolina's bench outscoring North Carolina. Deja Kelly, one of the guards for North Carolina, came out and said, "It felt like there were two people guarding me at all times." When Dawn Staley has the opposing team's guard seeing ghosts, that tells you how dominant South Carolina is, even versus solid competition in North Carolina.
George Sedano.
So two things stuck out to me. Caitlin Clark and Iowa being able to win despite Caitlin Clark having 5 turnovers in the first quarter and then still being able to make her teammates better in ways that wasn't just scoring. That stood out to me immediately. And then South Carolina. Listen, they have gone back-to-back seasons being undefeated at home. Only UConn has done that. UConn's done it twice. They did 3 seasons in a row and 2 seasons in a row. South Carolina, they are playing their best basketball right now, which is very scary for the rest of college basketball.
Harry Lyles Jr.
For me, I'm going to go Iowa, but because of South Carolina. South Carolina is the team to beat just as they were last year, and this Iowa team ended up beating them last year. But Caitlin Clark, to me, is one of the more self-aware players in America, because for as much as people have been talking about her records and which one she's going to break, this, that, and the third, she has been so meticulous about how this team wins games or the mistakes that they are making or ways that they can get better. And to me, she still has that fire. She showed it yesterday. She was extremely upset and hot-headed in a first quarter against a 16 seed. She has a very clear understanding that if we are going to win a championship, we have to be better than what we've been. And if Hannah Stolke does not play, I believe she had migraine issues yesterday. Kate Martin, when she plays great, she helps this team as well. And like, as long as they just put it together, this Iowa team could do it, but right now it's not there. And Caitlin Clark is trying to say, "Hey guys, we got to be a little bit better than this," herself included.
Last word, Monica McNaught.
Listen, Caitlin Clark is a name everybody knows. Juju Watkins is a name that you should know. But in addition to that, just look at all of these freshmen across women's college basketball. Malaysia Fuwaili talking about South Carolina. Hannah Hidalgo of Notre Dame. These young women are coming to hoop, so lock in.
Thank you, Monica. I appreciate that. You know, when I asked you about the field versus UConn, you all said the field. Raise your hands if you would take the field versus South Carolina. Terrible logic, y'all. Barcel is next.
No, it's not bad logic.
I did.
Different team.
I took the field last year. I'm taking them this year, too.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guarantee Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Gang, we need to talk about this Shohei Ohtani story. Bombshell reports late last week from Artisha Thompson that his interpreter and close friend Ipe Mizuhara had racked up $4.5 million in gambling debts. First, we heard from Ohtani's camp that Shohei helped pay off the debts, but Ohtani's lawyer the next day refuted that, saying Shohei was the victim of massive theft and had not transferred the money. There is so much here that we do not know. At 5:45 p.m. Eastern time today, Ohtani will issue a statement to reporters, but apparently will not answer questions. George, you're in L.A. What is the thing you need to hear most today, and how big is this story at this point?
Clinton, sorry, force of habit. But I think the reality is that the thing I want to hear, we're not going to hear, which is why did the story change in less than 24 hours? And I don't think we're going to get the answer to that because he's going to read a statement. It's a huge story. Major League Baseball's got their own investigation. We all know the history of Major League Baseball and gambling with one of their star players. We don't have to go there necessarily. And the feds are involved. If the feds are involved, you know it's a big deal.
Harry Lyles Jr., your thoughts.
Yeah, I want to know why there was a change in story, and we also absolutely need to hear that whether it was Shohei himself or his interpreter, we're not betting on baseball, right? I mean, that is the whole reason that we are talking about this, and it's an issue that has been, obviously, MLB has dealt with in the past with Pete Rose, but also, you just can't have this in your game. If you're a league, you cannot lose credibility with your fans thinking that any sort of player, Shohei Ohtani, or the last guy in the league, is affecting any sort of games, and if you have that issue, you have to squash it. So whatever he's going to say today, I am sure Rob Manfred is hoping that that's what it's going to get to.
Monica McNutt.
If you'll indulge me for a second, yes, this is a big story, and George and Harry laid out things that we need to know, but the larger thing to me is gambling in sports. It's becoming an inherent part of the way that fans consume the game. And in this case, an interpreter that works for the star player, works for the team, yes, very close. But how close is this thing going to get to athletes across all sports, and then leagues are going to have to deal with it? This is all getting really, really messy.
Bill Barnwell.
The line is very simple to me. If Shohei Ohtani bet on baseball, this is a huge career-changing, MLB-changing story. Anything short of that is going to be either swept under the rug or treated as a relatively minor story. If Ipe Mizuhara bet on baseball and just happened to use Ohtani's money to pay off those debts to a bookie, that is a story that Major League Baseball will conveniently avoid. They'll say it happened outside of our jurisdiction, happened in California, where betting is not legal, where sportsbooks are not legal. They will find a way to minimize the risk. But If Shohei Ohtani bet on baseball, this is a dramatic league changer.
I'm not buying that, Bill, and respectfully, here's why. The issue with Ohtani is that for somebody that was such a secret and private person, the assumption was, you're a pretty good dude. We're going to work on the operation that you, as the face of baseball, are doing just fine. To turn around and have this circumstance be what turns out to blow up the Dodgers season and you still don't really know anything about it, that's a bad look for the league. Harry, I'm with you on that. You just cannot have this in Major League Baseball, considering the history of the league whatsoever. Let's move on. New NFL rules, y'all. Say goodbye to the hip drop tackle. That'll be 15 yards and an automatic first down now. But Troy Vincent warns if it is officiated like the helmet rule, with more violations being flagged after games, with warning letters and fines, then that's not really going to work. Bill Barnwell, seems like early feedback from players is against the new rule. Do you buy or sell all of that, Bill?
I buy that players hate it. This is a rule that the NFLPA came out before it was approved and said, we do not want this rule to be passed, even though we've seen players like Mark Andrews, as we just saw, get injured as a result of this tackle. It's going to be difficult for the league to officiate it. There's going to be fines outside of the game day on Sunday that's going to impact this. But I do believe in the long run, it is better to have this rule than not have this rule. I know that we're going to see some games that are impacted by these calls, but if a player makes it through the year and to the playoffs who was not going to be healthy and miss out on a play if he had had this tackle that was not legislated previously, I think that is a positive, even if we don't see it.
Sedano, you're shaking your head. What you got?
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is a very violent sport. People are going to get hurt inherently based on the violence of the sport. You know what a hip drop tackle is? Just dropping your weight. I don't know a way to tackle someone from behind without dropping your weight, unless you're going to drive into them, and then you will create an unintended consequence, which will create potentially, in my opinion, more injuries. And I'm not the only one that believes that. Players are being vocal right now about this, both current, former, and coaches, current and former as well.
Harry Lyles Jr., your thoughts?
Clinton, so I called a player today and I was like, hey, like, what are your thoughts on this? He said, well, that Tony Pollard play that we just showed is one that is an issue. That's a very egregious sign or a very egregious example of it. He's like, but this is also a very natural part of the game. He's like, it's a cutback league and we are told to go for the inside hip to force guys to the boundary. And that's the only way to make that tackle. So he's like, short of a guy making a very inherently dirty play, this is a very natural way to make a tackle, because otherwise there's no way, to George's point, that you're going to be able to bring a guy down unless you do drop your weight, because the only other option is to let a guy go, and we're not going to do that. So it seems like a tough one, and one that we're probably going to talk about for the first month of the season, because it's going to keep coming up.
It's very simple. If you do some reporting, you get points. If you say somebody else's point was good, they get the point. Monica McNutt, your thoughts?
What if you tie the two together, Yates, since you're running the show? Look, Barnwell used the phrase, in the long run. Well, in the long run, maybe we just get rid of defense and make it a whole offensive show. Because if you keep making the game very, very difficult for these defenders to do their job, what are you actually doing? But besides all of that, the most asinine part of this to me is the fines. These guys are high-level competitors. If this is called in real time and it benefits one team, they're gonna want it called. Nobody wants to hear about a fine that comes down on a Wednesday. Like, what are y'all doing? Either enforce it or not.
Bill, last word.
We've seen this play out in rugby, the closest sport around the world to football. They had the same concerns. It managed to survive. Rugby is not in an uproar because of this rule. We will see some bad calls. We're going to see bad calls no matter what the rules are. Player health actually matters. We always criticize the NFL for not caring about player health. And now the one time they care about it, we're saying it's a terrible decision.
Speaking of drops, drop it.
It's only on one side of the ball
here. George, got to learn my name, buddy. I love you. Barnwell, see you later. Lyles, McNutt, coming up. We call that showdown, kiddos. See you soon.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Monica, Harry, let's do this. Two L's for the Dubs this weekend. Friday, losing to the Pacers, where Steph Curry played the entire fourth quarter. Last night, losing to the Wolves, with Steph sitting for half the fourth. Afterwards, here was Steve Kerr.
we can't expect to just ride Steph game after game after game. We're trying to win the game. We're trying to keep him fresh, too.
Harry, are the Warriors having an identity crisis as the playoffs near?
I don't think so, and I understand Steve Kerr's reasoning, because even Steph Curry said they have to build good habits going into the playoffs so they can win, and one of those is winning when he's on the bench. But you still got to win the game, man. Play him.
Monica.
The minutes restriction is there to protect him from himself. He clearly said he would have played forever, but he played in the entire fourth, and this road trip has to continue on. Let me let you guys in on a little secret, though. This team's not that good.
Hot stuff, Monica. She will get the point on that. Showdown dos. Dos a cero, in fact. U.S. men's national team over Mexico in the Nations League final. The only way they know how. A golazo from Tyler Adams. I mean, look at this.
A banger defending of a final.
Here's the second goal from Gio Reyna. Remember him? Corralled a bouncing ball, awkward volley, but he nailed it. Who had the nicer goal, Monica?
This is tough, Yates. This is so tough. I'm going to give the slightest edge to Tyler Adams because I can see the primary defender, the second line of defense, plus the goalie. I'm going Tyler Adams.
Harry?
I'm going Tyler Adams, too, but for me, it's because of the distance. I would never think that he would have made that particular play, getting his Jack Golke on, too, a little bit of NCAA tournament there for him.
Correct, and neither did Memo, the goalie for Mexico. It hit him, still went in. Moving on, showdown number three. I know this was a few days ago, but look at James Harden here, passing to Kawhi Leonard in the corner and then going for a closeout on his own teammate's open three-pointer. This possession continues with an offensive rebound to Harden, who then finds Amir Coffey for three in the other corner. Back to Harden's defense, something we rarely praise. How do you explain this, Harry?
So, Clinton, this is very clearly, at least in my interpretation, the greatest trash talk that I've ever seen. If you're up 20, 21 points and you go to defend your own guys, that I don't condone violence, but that is worthy, or I would not be mad at somebody if they decided to fight back.
Monica.
This is absolutely a bit. Shout out to the Portland Trail Blazer who was not deceived by somebody running out to defend Kawhi Leonard and still went to close out. Also, I don't think Kawhi thought it was that funny if you watched the whole clip through, too.
We love bits around here, and Harden, if nothing else, is committed to the bit. Monica, take the win.
All right. Us front-facing folks here on Around the Horn get a chance to shout out a bunch of causes that we love. But I want to take the day to shout out one of our terrific producers, Josh Bard, who is participating in the Boston Marathon leading a blind runner. I'm not going to give you his name because I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say all this. But Josh is doing a beautiful thing and hoping to raise money for the Massachusetts Association of the Blind in terms of helping these athletes enjoy the sport of running. And the guy he's assisting has already run like four major marathons. So he's going to have Josh keeping up with him. Congrats, Josh, and best of luck in March, or in April, rather.
Thank you, Josh. Appreciate that. That's going to do it. Thanks for coming around. We're a 23 and a half an hour break. Let's see if the arm is still any decent here for spring training. It's been a while since I got one across the infield. Got it, still player.